Have you heard the news? Basic Folk is now an official production of The Bluegrass Situation. We're leveling up on our folk pod game with our besties at BGS with a new logo, theme song, and a brand new attitude.
That's right, except I have the same bad attitude as last year. And our honest conversations with folk musicians continue to dignify under-the-radar roots musicians.
2025 is off to a great start with episodes featuring Jerry Douglas.
Every 15 to 20 years in bluegrass music, there is a renaissance period, and I believe we're in one right now.
Lou Tallo.
The act of writing and creativity is my meditation practice.
And Carolyn Kendrick.
The most important thing is, like, how do we try to mitigate harm?
Find us where you get your shows or at thebluegrasssituation.com. Thanks for listening, and welcome to Basic Folk.
I am constantly searching on the instrument. You know, like, for a while I might have dabbled on, like, play a little bit of guitar or a little bit of mandolin, but there's always, I never really did much with that because, for me, there was always so much to do on the fiddle. And yeah. I really wanted to, just like, if I was going to spend any time, I wanted to get to know this instrument better. It just never ends. And then if you start learning another music from another culture, you know, then all of a sudden you're approaching your instrument in a different way and thinking about music in a new way, and it just is like endless, and I'm always kind of exploring, I suppose.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments, handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and The Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Casey Dreesen is simply one of the most inventive fiddlers on planet Earth. I first saw him perform in his trademark red shoes with Tim O'Brien and have had the honor of performing with him in Woody Platt's backing ensemble, The Bluegrass Gentlemen. Casey is friendly and open-minded, but I get the sense he doesn't suffer fools, and I was admittedly a little intimidated going into the session. I knew that I would be stretched musically, and I really was. He and River, however, cultivated a musical situation where presence and attention were all that was needed, and we shared an unforgettable night of music that reminded me what Tuesdays at 185 King Street are all about. This episode was recorded live at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina on December 3rd, 2024.
Live from 185 King Street, the backyard of Brevard, North Carolina, it's a Travis Book Happy Hour. Brought to you by Americana Vibes, The Bluegrass Situation, and Thompson Guitars. With tonight's very special guest, Casey Dreesen. And featuring in the house band, River Gregorian. And now, your host, Travis Book.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Bill. As always, thank you. So excited to have Casey Dreesen down here. Been just a huge, huge fan of him for all the reasons, ever since I first met him when we were both living in Nashville. We're gonna have a lot of different things for you tonight. We're gonna start the show a little differently. We're gonna start with just Casey by himself, because that may actually be the best part of the show. But please, make him welcome to 185 King Street, Mr. Casey Dreesen.
All right. And we're off. Thank you, my friends. That's called Roscoe's Gone. Thanks, everyone.
Casey, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you some questions.
Okay, let me put my fiddle. Let me untangle myself.
Do you need an extra hand?
That would be amazing. Like in life or like ever?
Yeah, like have you ever wished like, that you had a third hand?
That would be amazing, yes, absolutely.
What would you do with your third hand?
Everything that I wish I could do with my two hands when they're busy. I would do the other stuff that I can't do.
I feel like this is headed toward a, like, what would your wife say kind of joke.
I don't know those kind of jokes.
Why am I not surprised? You were born in Minnesota. Is that where you grew up?
True.
A creature of the North Country.
True.
How long were you up there? Did you just go straight from there to Boston and Berkeley?
I spent my prepubescent years in Minnesota, and then I spent puberty in Chicago. I mean, these are like important times of your life, right? Right? You got the time before you went through puberty, and that's an important, formidable part of your life. That was Minnesota. And then you hit puberty, and then you have the things that happen after that. That was Chicago for me. And then there's college. I mean, these are like important markers of life. And in college, I was in Boston.
Boston and college. Was there music in your house growing up?
There was. My dad played banjo and pedal steel guitar, and I play the fiddle because it's not heavy like those instruments.
You chose so wisely.
I did not have a choice.
when did you discover the fiddle, or did it discover you?
You know, I think it was just kind of put in my hands, honestly. I did want to be a drummer first. I don't know if I ever mentioned that to River. And I did have a little, like, blue Ludwig kids kit that went from an early age, but I didn't really get far on that. But I think that my love of rhythm and drums has transferred itself to playing duets with drummers and playing percussion on the fiddle. But yeah, my parents got me playing fiddle, and I actually don't really know if I asked for it. I don't think I didn't ask for this. No, I seriously think it was because my dad played instruments that were really, really heavy, and we didn't need like another steel guitar and another banjo around the house and have somebody that you could actually like play some music with, like fiddle and banjo. And
right, totally. Yeah, if your father was playing banjo, playing pedal steel country music, obviously, if you're gonna cultivate someone to jam with, a fiddle player is really what you want.
And they come in small kid sizes. You know, which is great for fiddles. I mean, like, you don't have a guitar that's like a 16th size guitar, and then you graduate to a, you know, or a 16th size banjo, and then an 8th size banjo. It's kind of designed for kids to play.
Yeah, they certainly don't have that for the bass.
No, but you could play a little fiddle.
I'll remember that. I'll remember that next lifetime.
All right.
So you went to Berklee School of Music, and there was a super vibrant acoustic scene then, right? Mac Glazer was teaching fiddle and drawing all kinds of string band musicians to that area.
Yeah. It was a really amazing time when I was there. I originally thought I would go to like a regular college that had a good music program and do some liberal arts sort of things. And I realized it was really because my girlfriend, who was a year older than me, was going to that college already. And then she basically went to college, and I didn't. And then we broke up, and I was like, what am I doing? I don't want to go there and like have to run into her. So I was like, maybe I should go somewhere else. And so I decided to go to Berklee. And because I had met Matt Glazer at a Mark O'Connor fiddle camp, which was a really hugely important fiddle camp in, you know, the canon of fiddle camps for my generation of people. I'm not sure what's funny about that, but it was like hugely important, and it really kind of changed the game for fiddle players these days. We met so many amazing musicians there and have stayed friends and really grew as people and musicians there. Anyway, so I met Matt Glazer there when I was about 15, and so I knew about him. And my dad had always planted the seed maybe about going to Berklee for some music. And when I got dumped, I was like, that's where I'm going.
to the safety of Boston.
Yeah, to, you know, I realized it was actually where I was supposed to be. And the string department was about 60 people at that time, I think. And, you know, it's like 200 plus at this point. It's really, really grown. But we had a really amazing, tight group of folks. Hanukkah Castle was there. She's an amazing Scottish fiddle player. Evan Price, amazing jazz violinist. Carrie Rodriguez, a singer-songwriter from Austin. Kishi Bashi, amazing songwriter, fiddle looper. Rashad Eggleston was there on cello. There was amazing people happening. Laura Cortese was there at that time. All the Crooked Still folks were around the corner at New England Conservatory. Greg List was studying molecular biology and the aging of yeast at MIT. And he's a banjo player from Crooked Still, and we used to go jam in the subway. It was a vibrant music scene when I was in college. It was amazing.
How did you end up going to Nashville then?
I was trying to figure out, where does a fiddle player go? And it's a logical choice, you know, like as a musician, right? You go to like Chicago, LA, New York, and Nashville. And I actually got a gig going out of Nashville my year before senior year, playing with Tim O'Brien, Daryl Scott, Dennis Crouch on bass, and Steve Earle. And so I got asked to do that gig before my senior year, so I thought I would go down to Nashville, which everybody was at the time, and check out the scene there and, you know, kind of start and see if there's a place I wanted to come back to. So that's what started it.
That's so cool. I think I first saw you playing with Tim O'Brien. I don't know exactly what the iteration of the Tim O'Brien band was at the time. Maybe the...
There's been a few different ones. I've spent a number of years
and they've
them.
Been all so good. I think it may have been The Crossing.
Okay.
When he was doing the Irish stuff. But when I really got turned on to how exceptional you were was when I saw you play with the Sparrow Quartet at Rocky Grass, which is Bela Fleck, Abigail Washburn, Ben Soli, and you, just to drop a few names. And you've played with a lot of people over the years. What are some of your favorite ensembles you've been a part of?
Oh, I mean, that's an amazing one for sure. Music with any one of those folks is always a treat. The Steve Earle gig was an amazing one for me. I was 20, and getting to hang with Tim and Daryl and Dennis and Steve, and just like one of my first really gigs, you know, being out there, seeing what life is like. Doing a trio with Bela and Brian Sutton, that was an amazing experience. I've been pretty fortunate for some really amazing things. I'm sure I'm not mentioning a lot of like folks that I've like really enjoy playing with, but yeah, there's been a lot of great experiences.
Well, it's no surprise that you have had the opportunity to play with so many amazing musicians, because you yourself, at least from my perspective, you're like pretty much widely regarded as one of the most creative and unique fiddle players maybe ever, but certainly like of your generation. And I lump that with sort of my generation. I think we're about the same age. That's pretty much like accepted knowledge, you know, is that you're about as creative as they get. Where does this creativity come from, and how do you cultivate it?
Wow. Well, first, thank you so much, because it doesn't really feel like that ever. But I don't know. I just always want to play in different musical situations. You know, I've always wanted to be, like, if the music was enjoyable to listen to, I wanted to play it. And I would insinuate myself in many a musical situation. you know, like sneaking backstage at festivals when you see... I'm sure they were rehearsing, getting ready to go on stage, and I had no knowledge of like bands like rehearsing before they go on. And I would be like, oh my gosh, there's Tim O'Brien, and there's, you know, Sammy Sheeler, and there's like Tony Rice, and there's, you know, like whoever. And I'm like, they're playing, I'm going to sneak backstage, and I'm going to get my fiddle out, and I'm going to go jam with them. You know,
you're like, they're playing, I play. Seems so simple.
I know that tune. I would love to play. I mean, I just had no... I had no idea what I was doing. But really, like any music that that appealed to me, I wanted to find a way to try and be in that situation and learn how to play with it. And I mean, I'll finish by saying that, like, I grew up playing bluegrass, and so, like, at the core, I feel like a bluegrass fiddle player, but I always kind of have, like, a little identity crisis of, like, what, like, the way I might approach bluegrass or playing. You know, I feel so outside of, like, the traditional bluegrass thing, but I really still feel like a bluegrass fiddle player, even when I'm playing in other people's ensembles that might not be bluegrass. If that makes any sense,
yeah,
I don't
know. I think, you know, it's like some people, like, to watch you play, it's kind of easy to forget maybe that you're just a, like you're just like a fiddler at heart, because yeah. It is, what's happening is something that is so much, you know, that this saying, like, there are some people that are like banjo players and then there are like musicians who play banjo. And for you, it seems so obvious that you're just a really, really deep and complex musician that expresses themselves to the fiddle. You're not merely a fiddle player. You know, there's so much more to it, you know.
I'm constantly searching on the instrument, you know. Like, for a while I might have dabbled on, like, play a little bit of guitar or a little bit of mandolin, but there's always, I never really did much with that because for me there was always so much to do on the fiddle. And yeah. I really wanted to just, like, if I was going to spend any time, I wanted to get to know this instrument better. It just never ends. And then if you start learning another music from another culture, you know, then all of a sudden you're approaching your instrument in a different way and thinking about music in a new way, and it just is like endless, and I'm always kind of exploring, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, my next question was going to be that, like, you obviously are, like, incredibly curious and have a very active mind. I was going to ask sort of how that manifests itself in your music, but I think you sort of just answered that. There's this the sort of endless pursuit of what can be synthesized into who you are as a musician.
Yeah, thank you for answering that. That's perfect.
I'll just start asking myself questions about you. Where is when you're playing? I read an interview where you were being interviewed about your performance, and you talked about closing your eyes when you play, and that there is. You know, there's a trade-off where you may feel like there may be a little less connectivity with the audience, but you're able to so much better focus on your music and on the messages coming out of your instrument. But when you're playing, where is your attention? Where is your presence?
Oh. It's everywhere. I'm sorry. Podcast land, I am circling my head with my hands, my arms extended. I'm very visually stimulated. And if I close my eyes, I feel like I can focus and be more present in the music that is being made and being able to listen and connect with people. I am trying to, like, also look at people once in a while when we play to let you know that I am hearing you and I'm not just totally lost in myself.
Right.
But no, I've always found that I can focus better, you know, for myself and for the musicians. And ultimately, I hope that translates to, you know, more coherent or unified music from, you know, for you guys, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me just say for a second, I didn't used to close my eyes when I played, and one of my most favorite musicians in the world is Stevie Wonder, and I love Doc Watson, and I love Ray Charles. I mean, there's something about those three that always connected with me, and they must hear music differently as a result of not having the visual part of the world that we experience. And so I wanted to have a better connection to my instrument and to music, and so I started to practice closing my eyes and playing closing my eyes so that I could focus better and to see what happened. So that's really kind of where it started for me.
That is so cool. The last couple times we played together, we were playing various kinds of music with our friend Woody.
Yep.
Woody Platt. And one of those times you had just recently broken your finger.
True.
And you sent me a disclaimer. You said, you know, I'm happy to do the gig, but but I've got one less finger right now. And I was like, dude, that's fine. If you had one finger, I would totally just hire you for the gig. I was like, it's all good. You mentioned that, you know, the hand is healing, but there was a long period of time there where you basically had, you were down one finger. What was that like?
I was down my first finger, which I didn't realize how important that one was. It sounds silly, but, you know, so I broke my finger. I had an incident with a sledgehammer, and I still have a finger. I always wear gloves.
I
was wearing gloves then, and I don't use sledgehammers anymore, and I still wear gloves. So anyway, it was pretty traumatic, and I've just actually, this is nearly 2 years ago now, and I just kind of stopped going to PT for it, and you can see me like bending my finger right now and sort of stretching it, and it cracks and pops in different ways. It's crooked now, and it's a little shorter than it used to be. But yeah, so I had pins in it, and I couldn't play for 6 months. And then when the pins came out, I still couldn't really use that finger, but I had to, you know, like, still had to play because Woody and I had a really important gig that he had gotten, and he had invited me to do. We were just about to start making music together, and this gig had been planned for a while, and it was a fantastic gig. It was a gig with Steve Martin and Martin Short. And I would always wanted to like meet and play with those guys. And so I was like, Woody, I broke my finger. And he's like, do you think you're going to be better in time? I was like, I have no idea, you know? And so I would just like, it was like right at the edge of where I might be able to get back, you know, like, you know, get the cast off basically and the pins out. And so he was really patient with me. He would check in once in a while, like, how's it going? And I knew I had 5 tunes to learn. The first, and one of them was Orange Blossom Special that we had to play in the show. And I had 4 weeks to learn 5 tunes with 3 fingers. And the first thing that I played when I got my pins out, and, well, not with this finger, but I got the pins out so I could use the other fingers, was learning how to play Orange Blossom Special with 3 with 3 fingers, which is so funny to me.
That is pretty cool.
And we did the gig, and the first night we did not say anything to those guys because I didn't know how the gig was going to go, and I didn't want anybody to worry that here I was, you know, like coming on this big gig playing with only 3 fingers. And it went well, and Woody, you know, Steve came back afterwards and said, hey, you guys really sounded great tonight. I really enjoyed, you know, thanks for doing this gig. And then we let him in on the fact that I was only playing with 3 fingers. And then he put it into the show afterwards, for the next couple of nights we were playing. So, that was the first gig back with 3 fingers. And I played with 3 fingers for quite a long time. It was really challenging. But I learned so much about my instrument, myself, and I feel like I'm a different musician now, to be honest, than I was when I had before that, really. It was kind of a blessing in disguise, I guess. Yeah. You know, like I'm making some lemonade here.
you mentioned the Mark O'Connor fiddle camp, and I know that for fiddle players, it's pretty common for either the contest scene or the fiddle camp scene to be kind of an essential part of the entire culture of playing fiddle and connecting with other fiddle players. You had the opportunity to start your own fiddle camp.
I did.
Here in Brevard, at the Brevard Music Center. This last year was the first year.
Yes, it was.
And it went well.
It was amazing, to be honest. Like, I mean, I had a lot of ideas. I hadn't done it before, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect and how things would go. But I worked all year putting it together. Had a great team. I've had a lot of different ideas. I've taught at camps my whole professional, career, and then I attended camps. So I've been at a lot of camps, and it's always been a big part of my life. I think we did some really cool things. We brought a great community together. We're doing some different stuff there. It's called the Blue Ridge Fiddle Camp. It focuses on helping, just being a place to explore helping musicians, you know, that want to find their own voice on their instrument, whatever style they might be doing. It's not just strictly a fiddle, traditional fiddle camp in any way. Mm-hmm. Classical players, jazz players, rock players, old-time players, bluegrass players. If you have a curiosity about the instrument and you want to be around other people that have curiosity and want to share, and you want to do it by learning and being exposed to different styles, being exposed to rhythm and groove, and being exposed to technology. And that's what we're doing there. And the Brevard Music Center is amazing. I'm so thrilled to be doing it.
It's really cool that you're making that happen. And registration for that starts at the beginning of what will be this year by the time this podcast airs.
Yeah.
Beginning of 2025.
Yeah, it's going to be in January, February, and the beginning of March is when people can apply and register for it.
That's so cool that you're doing that here. I know Woody has been working on, you know, we've got the guitar, we have the Bela Fleck Banjo Camp.
Yeah.
Which, you know, why anyone would want to put 150 banjos together is beyond me. But they've never asked me to come up there and jam, so it's fine. And then there's the
Are you asking to come and jam? Are you asking to come and jam?
I mean, I would come to the fiddle camp, but I don't think I want to go jam at the banjo
camp.
Well,
first, actually, to come to the fiddle camp to jam, you have to go to the banjo camp first.
Okay.
It's part of the...
Okay, it's worth it.
I have been at Bela's camp the last couple of years. I am the house fiddle player for that so far, and... So I am the one that, you know, jams with a bunch of banjo players. I play in the band, and they do a concert which has a piece that has all the banjo players from camp on it. So it's like over 100 banjos, and it is amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. You will never hear that anywhere. And, like, I mean, I'm into sounds and different things, so I don't know, but I love it. And I would recommend everybody come to that concert for sure, and you should come. It's a really awesome experience.
I will be there if I'm in town. Thank you for the invite.
Yes. And if you come, you can come to fiddle camp afterwards.
Wow. That's how you earn your way in. If you survive banjo camp, you can come to fiddle
then
camp.
Then you're ready for fiddle camp.
Well, it's so cool that you do that. A little less specific question. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I don't know that I always follow it, but when I was in high school, I received a handwritten letter, because that's how we communicated, from Tim O'Brien, because I was a big fan of his, and I would find him at festivals and jam, and, you know, and I tried to you need a fiddle player for your band, let me know. You know, I was putting that out in the world a long time ago. And he wrote me a letter unsolicited at one point, and it gave me the advice to never fill the glass to the brim and always leave a little bit more. And I think that that really is a beautiful way to sum up the way that Tim is as a musician. I've always found him to be so tasteful and plays just the right things all the time, and it's never too much. It's just right. And I have a tendency to, get excited. But I am still holding a little bit in reserve. It may not seem like it. I'm really trying, though. But that is advice that I have never forgotten, and I'm sure that I still have that letter in a shoebox somewhere at my house.
That is so cool. But besides leaving a little in the cup, What do you aspire to?
Right now, I'm just trying to be present in whatever situation that I'm in life and music, and be aware and be compassionate and be a listener and be open and to be a student and to grow and explore the world and, I don't know, just bring what I can and to make this place better somehow.
I just have a couple more questions. Thanks everybody for being so patient. It's coming.
Lightning round?
It's coming. Is your legacy important to you?
Legacy? I never think, how do you mean? Like, like what I'm leaving for, it's just in the world? Or are we talking musically or just in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Like, is it important to you to that? Do you care what people say about you after you're not around? You know, like after you leave the gig tonight.
You know, I'm a pleaser, and you know, I like to be liked. I'm not going to lie about that. But I would like to care less about those things sometimes. Do I care about my legacy? I don't think about like having a legacy. I would like to. I hope that the things that I do are meaningful to other people. If they are, I'm happy about it. I'm not doing it for those reasons necessarily, but I'm glad to know when things are positively received by folks. You know, we all play some sort of part in this world. You know, especially in this fiddle world, we all got. There's so many great fiddle players doing amazing things out there, and it's just important to celebrate them all.
So true. What advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Oh, this one.
Oh God, this question. I had to put some cliches in there.
You know what? I could have prepared for this. I remember you asking this before to somebody else.
It was Luke Bula. You were here for Luke's show.
I know.
You remember that.
What would I tell my 15-year-old self? You know, this is actually something that Luke and I have talked about a lot. Luke is a buddy of mine that I met at the Mark O'Connor Fiddle Camp when we were like 14 years old, and we've stayed friends forever. So much happens in life in such a short amount of time. Like, we would think back, you know, like we'd hang out and like talk about like what happened in the last 5 years. And so many things happened, more than I would have ever imagined as a kid. You know, and just that life happens, you know, musically for sure. But I guess I would just tell myself to, you know, be a little more patient.
That's sound advice.
What things will happen.
Here's the last open-ended question before the lightning round. What is the most important thing to you?
Oh my God, the most important thing to me? That would be my family.
Of course it is. Great answer. Yeah. What about musically?
Musically, the most important thing to me... that is so hard.
You can always be like, I don't know, dude. What's the most important thing to you?
So I can stall a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I have a hard time deciding sometimes. So the most important thing for me right now, I think I said it earlier, is learning how to be present in the moment of the music that is being made, and to not, I'm really trying hard to stay out of my head and just play.
If you're enjoying this fiddle-centric episode of the Happy Hour podcast, check out episode 38 with Luke Bula, episode 35 with Phoebe Hunt, or episode 21 with Jeremy Garrett. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Now back to the show.
Guilt to blame. the stars were shining bright. Storm come up and the trees come down. Tell you boys I was waterbound. Well, waterbound on a stranger's shore. A river rising to my door. Carried my home to the fields below. Waterbound, nowhere to go. You can see the light. Black cat crawling on an old boxcar. A rusty door and a fallen coat. Star. Ain't got a dime in my nation's sack. I'm waterbound and I can't get back.
That's called Waterbound. That's by Dirk Powell. Well, I think we got one more tune for you guys this evening. Thank you so much for hanging out, and it's been a real pleasure to be here with you, Travis. And River, thank you so much. I hope everyone goes into a lovely holiday this year. And this is an old-time fiddle tune, stretched out and compressed and enjoyed by us. Hopefully you. But it's kind of like, if I don't like myself, how can I expect you to like me? So if I don't enjoy this music, how can I expect you to like it? Right? I'm just thinking about this right now.
That's so true.
So,
you have to play what you enjoy.
I'm going to like this.
You're going to enjoy yourself.
I'm going to enjoy this. No, it's been a real treat, so thanks everybody for listening. And thank you, Derek, on the sound. Much appreciated. And thank you, Madeline, for having us here. Thank you, everyone.
That's Casey Dreesen.
River Gagarin and Travis Book.
Thanks so much for being here tonight. Yeah.
Thank you.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Casey Dreesen, River Gagarin, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, 185 King Street, Derek Stutt, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.